you can be seated. One quick announcement. If you're looking for an area to serve on Wednesdays, we would like to train some women to, don't get nervous, run the soundboard and also doing the screens. It's not as difficult as you might think it is, and the training is thorough, but we have people doing it, but sometimes they get sick or they're out or whatever, and it would be nice to have several women who would be able to do that. Wednesday mornings and Wednesday nights. So if you don't want to do that Wednesday morning, we need it on Wednesday nights too. Okay, we are starting a new book, Book of Daniel, and we've titled this study in the Book of Daniel, Faithful in a Foreign Land. We just ended Nehemiah looking at an incredible godly man, and now we get to look at another one from the time that he was a youth until he was an older man, and he remained faithful to the Lord. The book is divided into two parts. Chapters 1 through 6 are more of a look into Daniel's and his friends' lives. It's more of a personal narrative. There's a lot of good application and lessons for us in those first six chapters. And then chapters 7 through 12 are the visions and the prophecies that God had given Daniel that he wrote down. Now, if you've already kind of looked through your homework or your schedule of the homework, we're taking a chapter a week, 1 through 6, and then, yes, we are going to do chapters 7 through 12 in one setting, so it'll be obviously an overview. But I like the application of the first six chapters. And I would encourage you to dig into your homework. It's there for your edification, for your spiritual growth. Don't get overwhelmed by it. Look at it as a treat, as something that is going to be a blessing in your life, something that's going to work eternal things, spiritual things into your life. So try not to be in a hurry or just to skip it. It's for you. What you put into it, you're going to get out of it. And then it also is very helpful when you come and you're in your group and they're going over questions in your homework. So I encourage you to dig in if you haven't been doing that. Daniel, at the beginning of this book, he was a very young teen, possibly, they think, as young as 14, from 14 to 17, somewhere in there. Now, you just picture in your mind, and perhaps you have a 14-year-old son, or 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old boys, and you picture them and the things that they face and the things that their bodies are going through and the development and all of that. And that is exactly where Daniel was in life. Now, he was about 14 to 16 when he was taken into captivity. And he remained there the entire 70 years. They were in captivity and probably beyond. So he was there from maybe, let's say, age 14 all the way into his late 80s and possibly into his 90s. And that was a long time. And he stayed faithful throughout that time. Now, Daniel, in Jerusalem, where he was born and he was raised until he was taken captive, he was just another kid. An unknown. And when he was brought into Babylon, he then was given a position as ruler over the whole province of Babylon. He was ruler over the chief administrators and over all the wise men. And he had a very high profile life. And with a high profile life, there is a lot of pressure to perform and to be a certain way. And most people can't stand the pressure. Most Christians, if they are put into that position, they compromise. And yet Daniel did not. He remained faithful. For 70 plus years, he was untouched by the Babylonian world, by the Babylonian influence. He did not compromise. He remained faithful in that foreign land all the days of his life. Now that gives you and I courage and comfort and strength to look and say, if he did it, I can do it. It can be done. You know, there are some Christians who cannot stand in a crowd. They cannot maintain their witness and to be like Christ in a crowd of people. They feel too much pressure from everyone else. They may be embarrassed. Even embarrassed to pray in public for your food. They may be ashamed when they're in a crowd and nobody else talks about the Lord. Nobody else is doing what a Christian person should be doing because they're all worldly people. And they feel that pressure. They don't want to be different. They would rather just kind of blend in, so they become like the people they're around, just so they won't be pointed out. And they bend and they cave and they compromise. Now, there are some Christians who cannot stand when they're alone, when nobody's looking, because who will know the difference? So they're one thing, seeming to be very strong when they are in a crowd, and yet when they're alone behind closed doors, they compromise. Daniel and his friends, they stood for the Lord while they were alone. They're away from home. They're away from their parents. They're away from their peers. They're away from the temple, the worship there. They're away from any kind of spiritual influence that they had. They are in Babylon. They're in the world. Who is going to know? Who would blame them with all that pressure and them being so young? Yet they didn't compromise. They remained faithful. They stood. Daniel and his friends also stood for the Lord in a crowd, in Babylon, in front of the king. His friends were not going to bow when they were forced to bow. They wouldn't do it. Daniel continued to pray when it was against the law to pray. They wouldn't compromise alone or in a crowd. Someone said, and I don't know who it was, but this is, I really like this. Life is a series of decisions. Who we are today is a result of the decisions we have made in the past. And who we will be in the future will be determined by the decisions we make today. And that is a good thing for us as moms to impart into the lives of our children and then for our own lives. Who we are today is a result of the decisions that we have made. You just look back over your life and the decisions, good or bad. You're reaping either the fruit or the suffering the consequences. And then the decisions that we make today are going to determine how our future will be and who we will be. There is so much for us to learn in this book, so many different lessons, and of course, we certainly cannot cover them all. The book shows that Daniel's life and that of his friends, it shows us how we can live in a pagan or in a secular environment. They were put in a very pagan city and secular city, and yet they remain faithful. So we can learn how we are to live in this world and not be of this world, not take on the appearance of the world. The book also strongly shows the sovereignty of God. You can see God's hand. And sovereignty of God means that God can do what he wants, when he wants, to whom he wants, however he wants, at any time. God is God. And he can do whatever he wants, but he only uses his sovereignty in our lives for good. For good. Because he's a good God. But you can look and see his hand behind everything. Behind the captivity itself. You see his hand. Behind the trials. Behind all of the events. Proverbs 21:1 tells us, the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. Like the rivers of water, he turns it wherever he wishes. And Psalm 75:7, but God is the judge who puts down one and exalts another. And all through the book, you see that. He's putting down one and he's exalting another. Daniel was an unknown. He exalted Daniel. Nebuchadnezzar is this powerful king. He put him down and then he raised him back up. And all through, we see God's sovereign hand. It also shows us that God's faithfulness to preserve his people while in captivity. Anytime you read the Bible, you see God's faithfulness and him taking care of his children. And also this book tells of future events, the prophecies, the visions. And it gave the people and gives us that hope that there is a future. It speaks of the rise and fall of kingdoms. It speaks of the coming of Messiah. It speaks of the times of the Gentiles, the great tribulation. It speaks of the second coming of Christ. And some of these prophecies have already been fulfilled, and some of them will yet be fulfilled. The book of Daniel also is an unusual book in that it was written in two different languages. The language of Hebrew, which is the God's people then and now, the language they speak is Hebrew. And it was also partly written in Aramaic, which at that time was the language of the Gentiles. Not all the chapters in Daniel are in chronological order. And we'll kind of get to that each chapter and put them in chronological order. But that's kind of interesting when you're reading it, because you just think that everything follows, and it does not. Daniel is the author of this book, though it has been disputed over the years by secular scholars and so-called Christian scholars. And partly because they just can't handle the fact that those prophecies are so detailed that how could anybody know those details before it happened? But God can reveal his truth, and he has throughout the Bible where he has spoken and that it has come to pass. Daniel refers to himself throughout the book as the author, I, Daniel, I, Daniel, I, Daniel. And most importantly, Jesus, in the Gospels, in Matthew and in Mark, he quotes Daniel. He said, Daniel the prophet wrote or said. And that's good enough for me. The time period, which, you know, if you went through the Bible with us the last couple of years, to get the chronology, it's important, I think, in our minds to get it set in the right time period. Daniel is before Nehemiah. Now, we just went through Nehemiah, but Daniel, all this happened before the time of Nehemiah. Because remember that Nehemiah came back in to rebuild. Well, at this time, at the beginning of the book, it hadn't been destroyed yet. It was 605 B.C., and then the parallel passage, if you looked in your homework, you know it's in 2 Kings 24, and it's always good to read that to find out, okay, what was going on during this time when Daniel was taken captive. Well, during that time, the southern kingdom of Judah was not doing well. They had an evil king who was not walking in the ways of the Lord. And so that influence in Jerusalem itself is not a spiritual environment at all. Well, from this time period, 105 years earlier, so back when King Hezekiah was king, Isaiah prophesied about this captivity and about this very thing in chapter 1. In Isaiah 39, he said, "Behold, the days are coming when all that is in your house," speaking to the king Hezekiah, "and what your fathers have accumulated until this day shall be carried to Babylon. Nothing shall be left, says the Lord. And they shall take away some of your sons who will descend from you." Speaking of Daniel. "Whom you will beget, and they shall become eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon." So 105 years earlier, God prophesied, this is what's going to happen. Because of the evil that the southern kingdom of Judah had done, they were not walking in the ways of the Lord, but in their own ways. And he was going to use Babylon to chastise his people. And he told Jeremiah that. And Jeremiah prophesied in Jeremiah 25 that they would be, God would use Babylon to take them captive, to chastise them, and to keep them in captivity for 70 years. And then he also went on and said, "And then after that, I will chastise Babylon for the sin that they have done." Now, Nebuchadnezzar, he became king of Babylon in August of 605 BC. Well, 1 month later, in September, is when he came into Jerusalem and invaded the land, and he attacked, besieged, and then attacked Jerusalem. And at that time, Daniel and his friends were taken back into Babylon. Now, he left everything else, the king there and everything else. So every time, you know, time went on. But 8 years later, Nebuchadnezzar came back into Jerusalem again because of the king at that time, Jehoiakim. He was rebelling against Nebuchadnezzar. And so at that time, he took him and about 10,000 other people captive back to Babylon. Well, a few years after that, he went back into Jerusalem to take, just basically wipe out the city. That is when they went in and destroyed the city, tore down the walls, and burned the temple and tore it all down, and then took the remaining survivors back to Babylon. But that was over about 17 years from when Daniel was first taken to the actual destruction of Jerusalem. Let's start reading. "In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord," now notice that, "the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, because the Lord had already prophesied, 'I'm going to come in and take you.'" So you see, already see God's hand here. He's in this captivity. "With some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God, and he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children," excuse me, "of Israel and some of the king's descendants," just as was prophesied, "and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans." So here again, we see God's sovereign hand. The Lord gave, because it's all a part of his plan. He uses his sovereignty for good. And they came in and they took Daniel and those three friends of his, among others, I'm sure, back into Babylon, and they became eunuchs. Now, a eunuch is a man who they castrate so that there is no sexual temptation, because they are going to be serving around the king and in the palace. The king doesn't want competition. He doesn't want the women around him looking at these young, handsome, good-looking men. So they become eunuchs. They castrate them so that it basically removes all their sexual desire. And so there won't be that temptation. And he wants only the best. The young man, well, there's no blemish, there's no physical flaw that you can see. That they're good looking. That they're gifted in all wisdom. They're sharp. They know how to handle themselves. Possessing knowledge. Quick to understand. Again, they're sharp in their thinking. These are not your typical young boys. They're special. Who would have the ability to serve in the king's palace. The cream of the crop. The best of the best. As they went and looked through these young Hebrew boys and just visually picking some out, and then I'm interviewing them to find out what they know, how they've been trained, how do they handle themselves, because he only wants the best. And he took the young because they're very impressionable and he could do what he wanted with them. He could mold them. And that was his purpose. So that he might teach them the language, the literature, all that involves, and basically to indoctrinate them, to brainwash them, to turn them into Babylonians, to turn them into what he wants. You know, and all through history, men in power have done that. Hitler did that, and he went after the young to indoctrinate them. We see it today. I saw a horrible portion of a documentary on the Muslim, what they're doing, how they're targeting their youth. This was a kindergarten or preschool class. That you see these little kids and they are pounding into their head that they hate the Jews. And these little kids, like we teach Bible stories, and they are screaming out to hate the Jews and to kill the Jews and to kill the Jews. They're just indoctrinating them. And the younger you are, the more impressionable you are. So here he's after these, just at that time where these young men are deciding which way they're going to go and what looks the best and what sounds the best. And he knows what he's doing, and he gets in there to try to indoctrinate these young men. Verse 5, and the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. So they were to undergo a very strict and rigorous, three-year training course where day in and day out they are being taught the ways of the Babylonians. They're being taught about the agriculture, about architecture, about astrology, about astronomy, about their mathematics, about their language, about their law, everything that they could learn about their gods. And the king had appointed them a daily provision of his delicacies and of his wine, enticing them with luxury, right at their fingertips. Pretty hard to say no. Here are these boys, what did they know before? And here they have it all laid out. What an opportunity for them. Now, Babylon at that time was a great empire and a great, just an incredible city. It was huge. It was a wonder of the world at that time. It is amazing the technology that they had at that time. And I remember on our first trip to Israel when we went up to Masada, where King Herod had his winter palace. And, it's just ruins now, but to see the ruins, to see just the outline, to see the outline of the rooms, to see, and they still have up there, the mosaic tiles, little tiny mosaic tiles, the floor incredible. They had a swimming pool. You're talking about desert. This is desert up on a hill. They had a swimming pool. They had a sauna. All of these things that you're just blown away. How would they even know how to do this? How could they possibly do it? And then they would plaster the walls and paint on the walls, the faux finish, you know. I mean, it was just absolutely incredible, just magnificent. And Babylon was beyond anything. The wall around the city of Babylon was 60 miles. So it was a very big city. The wall was 300 feet high. That's 25 stories high. This building is tall, but, you know, go beyond. This is just, that's just the wall to protect. Remember the wall that Nehemiah built? Wasn't that tall. 25 stories high, and it went 35 feet below so that the enemy couldn't dig under and get them. It was also 80 feet thick. I can't even comprehend this. And then it was protected around by a very wide and deep moat, and filled with water and all those moat reptiles and things that you won't want to get caught in. The wall had 250 towers with guard rooms and soldiers all the way around protecting the city. It had 100 gates of brass. It was called the City of Gold because it had so many gold images. One of them weighed 50,000 pounds. It was a very, very affluent, very rich, very pagan city. It had these famous hanging gardens where he had his own greenhouse and just the plants and everything in that time. I don't know, when you picture things like this, if you're picturing desert and dry and all that, but you know, you got to put color in there because they added all of that color. And then Nebuchadnezzar's palace in that city was the most magnificent palace or buildings, they say, that was ever erected on the earth, and they uncovered that in the early or late 1800s, early 1900s, so they can get an idea of what that looked like. And it was in this city and that palace that Daniel and his friends were taken. That's where they lived, and that's where they were to serve. Now, we would, if we saw that today, our jaws would drop. I mean, we would be taken back by the sight of this. And for these young boys, young men to be brought to that place, they've never seen anything like this before. They were in Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem was the city of the great king, yes. But they had an evil king right at that time when Daniel was growing up. And they had 20 kings. 8 of them were good. So it was preserved a little bit. But during this time when Daniel was, I think he was born at the end of Josiah's time, who was a good king. But then the next king was a bad king. And then the next king was a bad king. This city, an unholy place, it's not going to have, especially an unholy place that's supposed to be holy, is God's not going to bless it. So it's not going to have what they have in Babylon. It's not going to have the luxuries. It's not going to have the delicacies. It had the temple, but even in God's temple, and that Solomon built, which had the gold and everything, there's no idols. There's no statues. It was very simple, and it wasn't that large. So can you imagine Daniel and his friends being taken to this place? What young person wouldn't indulge? Wouldn't be just swept off their feet and just caught up and taken in on the whole thing? Not Daniel, though. Not his friends. Verse 6. Now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. To them the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach and to Azariah Abednego. They were to be fashioned into Babylonians. And part of this is that they needed to change their name, and wanted to change their identity. They wanted to change their character. They wanted to change who they were. Now, each one of their names, as you've read in the homework, they have a spiritual meaning. They are connected with the true and the living God. So that every time their name was said or called, they would be reminded of the Lord or something about the Lord. And Nebuchadnezzar didn't want them to be reminded of their God. He wanted them to have a new God. He didn't want them to be identified with their God anymore. He wanted to give them a new identity. Daniel's name means God is judge. You remember Jacob and all of his sons, and Rachel couldn't bear children, and so she gave her maid Bilhah, I think, to Jacob, and they conceived and had a son, and they named him Dan, because God is my judge. Dan means judge. And El, anytime we have El in that name, it speaks of Jehovah. So Daniel is God is judge. Now his name, this new name, Belteshazzar, depends on who you read of the exact meaning, but they all mean or are connected with pagan gods. His is Bel's prince. Hananiah, beloved of the Lord. Every time he would hear his name, he knew he was beloved of the Lord. Well, they didn't want him to know that anymore. So now his new name, illumined by the sun god. So give me a new identity. Turn my mind to this new god, Mishael, who is like God. And his new name, who is like Shek, which she was a god, goddess. Azariah, the Lord is my help. The servant of Nebo, another god. They just took their godly names and changed them to these ungodly pagan names that would be connected with their gods. But what Nebuchadnezzar didn't know is that though he could change their name, he could not change their character. He could not change who they truly were in their heart. Verse 8, but Daniel, and I like those two words, but Daniel, purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. But Daniel, now Daniel, he doesn't want to be conformed. We see it right away, immediately. But Daniel is different. Now at that time and throughout really the Bible times, all the meat that they would serve was first offered to their God, and then it was either taken to their table or to the marketplace. So Daniel, being a Jewish young man, knew that that was not in the law of God, that was against that. He didn't want to be defiled by that. He didn't want to eat meat that they offered to a god. And he didn't want the king's provision. He didn't want that. And so he said no. And what Nebuchadnezzar didn't know either is that he was too late. He was too late. Daniel and his friends, they had already decided at that young age who their God was and who their God was going to be. It was a done deal. And when it is a done deal, nobody, nothing can change. The decision in their hearts had already been made before they left their home. Besiegement of that city couldn't change it. Being taken captive could not change it. All the luxuries around them could not change it. their schooling, their indoctrination, their training could not change it. They had already decided who was on the throne in their lives, and they weren't going to budge. Someone said that true character is what we do when no one is watching. Who we are in our innermost being, in your gut, in your heart of hearts. That's who you really are, and it will come out when no one's watching, when people are watching, when we're determined in our heart as Daniel. Let's read the rest of the chapter. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king who has appointed your food and drink. For why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you would endanger my heads before the king. So Daniel said to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you, and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies. And as you see fit, so deal with your servants. So he consented with them in this matter and tested them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. Thus the steward took away their portions of delicacies and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables. As for these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days, when the king had said that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. Then the king interviewed them, and among them all, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore they served before the king, and in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in all his realm. God's hand and his favor was upon Daniel and his friends. He gave them favor right at the beginning of the chief eunuchs. He gave him favor so that when Daniel made that request, that the chief eunuch said, okay, well, I'll try it. God gave them knowledge and skill in what they were to learn. He gave them that supernatural ability to learn everything that they were being taught. They could understand it. And then he gave them the wisdom to know what to do with all the knowledge, to how to conduct themselves. And he gave Daniel understanding in all the visions and the dreams. And there was none found like them. They were 10 times better than all of the other young boys and men that they had been trained, and the magicians and the astrologers who had been surrounding the king. Daniel had the faith to go ahead and ask that he wouldn't partake. He had purpose in his heart. I'm not going to be a part of this. You're not going to change me. You're just not going to do it. And he had the faith to know that God was for him and that God would take care of him and provide for him and protect him during that time. Now, two points of application for us this morning, and that is to be sure that we have a firm foundation in our lives. You have got to believe that Daniel and those three other young men had a good and a firm foundation in God's word and in him. They were Hebrew boys. Hebrew boys were taught the scriptures. they were, Daniel at least, and the other ones, they were of the king's lineage. So somewhere they're blood relatives to the king, so they get extra training. Now, though the king was evil, I think Daniel's parents saw to it that he would receive that training. So he'd go to the synagogue or go to Hebrew school and go over the scriptures. And at a very young age, these young boys and men, they knew the truth. And they had decided that they were going to follow after the truth. They knew the word. They knew who their God was. And it is so important in our lives to have a firm foundation. Do we? Are we really grounded, anchored to that rock? Jesus said that if our foundation is firm, that when the storms of this life hit, the temptations of this life hit, all the trials and the hardships, we will stand. We will stand. It is those who he calls foolish who have not built their lives on a firm foundation. They've built it on sinking sand. Then when the storms hit, the temptations hit, the trials, the hardships, they're going to fall. They are going to sink. So if our foundation and our commitment to the Lord is firm, then there will not be compromise. The compromise comes when our foundation, there's something wrong, the footing, your footing's off. Maybe you have one foot on the rock and the other foot on the sand. And then the temptation comes and then the compromise comes. If our foundation isn't firm, it is just a matter of time. It's going to hit. The one storm, the one temptation, it's going to hit. Remember Nehemiah, we talked about the enemy, how he's going around that wall. It could take 50 years for him to find that spot. But if that foundation isn't firm, he's going to find it. And we don't want to fall. We need that firm foundation. And oh, how we need to teach our children and give them that firm foundation. Daniel's parents didn't know that he was going to be taken captive. We don't know, not to place fear in there, anybody's heart, but we don't know what might happen tomorrow and where our children may end up. We need to give them that firm foundation. We've been going through Exodus on Sunday nights, and Damien was talking about Moses' mother, and as she got to care for him as an infant and nurse him, just filling his heart and his mind and whispering in his ears about the Lord and the things of the Lord so he knew who he was. We need to do the same thing with our children over and over and over again so that they know. There's no way that Daniel and his friends could be 14, 15, or 16, or however old they are, at this point in time, and have the strength of character and the conviction to stand had they not had that foundation. The foundation is so important, and it's never, ever too late. Not in your children's life and not in your own. It's never too late to make firm that foundation and that commitment. And then the next is that purposing in your heart. The importance of making that decision ahead of time. Daniel had already done it. He didn't wait until he got in the palace and then said, you know, I don't think I'm going to eat that meat and that wine. No, no, no. The temptation's too strong. He's surrounded by adults. He's very young. He's impressionable. He's surrounded by adults. He's surrounded by so much temptation. It's like putting a child in the candy store that just has this sweet tooth. I mean, how can you, you know, put yourself in your place of your greatest weakness, your greatest temptation, and you put yourself in there and no one's watching? you have to already have made that decision beforehand. Daniel did that. They're not gonna change me. They're not gonna do it. And you can almost hear him as he's being led, you know, pulled out of his home. You don't even know what that was like. Is there a bunch of screaming and his mother's having this, you know, just nervous breakdown because they're taking her child and he's off and she might be yelling. Oh, I'm getting choked up here. She might be yelling, you know, remember your God, remember your God, remember who you are. And here he's just determined to know his God and to stand for his God. He already made that decision. His friends already made that decision. Have you made that decision? I love that song. I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back. I mean, have you truly decided to follow him? Now, that, you might think, well, that is a ridiculous question for you to ask us. But you know what? It is possible to walk with the Lord for a year, for 3 years, for 5 years, for 15 years, for 40 years, for your lifetime, and to have never made a full commitment to him. You just have that partial relationship with him. People do that in marriages. They make wedding vows all the time. Words are not a commitment. It has to work out in our lives. Till death do us part. I will be faithful to you. And you look all around the world and around people that you know, and the infidelity, the adultery, that's just so quick. But if you determine ahead of time, no, I would never do that. In fact, Damien and I said this before, we had an agreement. If either one of us commits adultery, the other one has permission to kill the other person. That is a determined heart. That's not going to happen. You're not going to open the door. You're not giving any place for the enemy to come in on the temptation. He purposed, and that word purposed is determination. It's strength of mind. It's willpower. It's fortitude. It's resolution. It's a promise. It's a pledge. It's an oath. And it is not, I'm not talking about what Damien referred to Sunday night about the little engine that said, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can. It is not those people that we talked about in Nehemiah who said, I'm going to serve the Lord. I won't neglect the house of the Lord. Let me sign right here. That's not what I'm talking about. It is a purpose of heart. It is a heart commitment. It is not words. It is not just, oh yeah, uh-huh. It is, no, I have decided to follow Jesus. I am not going to be defiled by the things of this world. Now, you remember also in the book of Exodus, which we haven't gotten there yet on Sunday mornings, but when Moses is going to Pharaoh and let my people go. And the plagues, God sends the plagues. And it tells us in several different places, and Pharaoh hardened his heart, and Pharaoh hardened his heart. And it also says, and the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart. And that means he confirmed Pharaoh's decision. So I believe that just as God can harden Pharaoh's heart, confirm the decision that he's already made, that in our lives, when we make that decision firm, that he solidifies it. He honors it. Look what he did in Daniel's life. There's no other explanation than the power of God in confirming what these young boys had already done. They decided. They already decided who their God was, who their God was going to be, who was going to be on the throne. And God he saw that, and he's pleased with that. And he knows we're flesh. He knows we are weak. It's not like Daniel was perfect. He's still like you and me. But God saw that he was determined, and he just strengthened that determination. He will do that in our lives if we are truly committed, truly decided. to follow him. We're told that we're to keep our heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life, Proverbs 4:23. To keep our heart, to make it pure and sure toward the Lord. Daniel, being so young, stood for the Lord. Being so young, withstood all the temptations around him. Being so young, he withstood being conformed to the Babylonian ways and their influences. Daniel, being so young, was faithful where he was. We can be faithful too. If you have found yourself over the years or just recently or whatever it might be, that you've been wishy-washy. You're giving into temptation. There's compromise. And you're not being faithful. You need to make that decision today. To commit to the Lord. Really and truly. It is that holy surrender to him that needs to be a part of our lives once and for all, and then renewed all the time. A true commitment, a true surrender. And I know what it's like because I am like everybody else. I have a sin nature like everybody else. And I know what it's like to say the words, to sing the songs, to make the promises. And you really don't mean it, but nobody knows. And you're trying to trick yourself that you really mean it. And we have to stop that. And say, I am truly going to surrender. If it kills me, no matter what may come my way, so that I make firm that commitment. And when we do that, God will honor it. And He will confirm it in our lives. He will solidify it. He will just drive us deeper into that rock. And hold on, and we will withstand the storms and all of the temptations, and there won't be compromise in our lives. We need to make that commitment if we haven't. And if we have before, but we've found ourselves, oh, I can't stand in a crowd. I'm compromising. I'm ashamed. I'm embarrassed. I don't want to be different. And we need to be asked to be either baptized with the Spirit or refilled with the Spirit today. Or maybe it's when you're alone. Nobody knows what I'm watching. I know I'm not supposed to watch this, but I really like it anyway. Nobody will know. Nobody knows what I read. Nobody knows this or that. If that is you, you need to either be baptized in the Spirit if you haven't been, or refilled with the Spirit today. So that you can stand like Daniel and his friends stood and not compromise and be faithful. Lord, thank you for the last verse of this chapter that says, and thus Daniel did so and remained the rest of his life. And thus Daniel did. And Father, we want that to be spoken of us. That we would remain faithful in this world that you've placed us in this secular city, in a secular environment, secular jobs, stores, wherever we find ourselves, that we would remain faithful and true to you. And Father, I pray for each one of us, that we would lay our lives down, we would surrender, and we would make that commitment to you to be holy, to be true. Now, just take a moment in your heart and do that before the Lord.